Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well. I'm looking forward to our unusual day today.
We have an unusual day today?
Oh, I don't know if you recall, but tonight we're not going to be at the restaurant for the early part of dinner service. We are going to be judging the Mayor's Healthy Cook-Off at the Wegmans in Woodbridge.
Yes, I think that'll be exciting. I remember. We're going to be with Stephen Baker, Touchdown Maker, one of the other judges.
That is correct, sir. Who are the other judges?
Senator Joe Vitale.
Senator Joe Vitale, who's been into the restaurant and has excellent taste. Yeah.
That's going to be the group of us. I think it should be a diverse panel, and they should listen to us about all the food stuff.
By the way, if you'd like to come to the Mayor's Healthy Cook-Off, it is in Woodbridge tonight at the Wegmans in Woodbridge, which is on Woodbridge Center Drive, and it's from 6 to 8:30 p.m., and it's going to be the ingredients are all supplied by Wegmans, the utensils are all supplied by Wegmans, and the mayors of several towns in central Jersey will be competing to cook a healthy, low-fat, low-calorie, but delicious recipe.
And they'll be judged on various criteria by us.
You know, we've gone through so many, like, zoning board meetings and planning meetings where the mayors and the councils judge us. We're judging them now.
Yes, it seems turnabout is fair play.
And so the Mayor's Wellness Council and the Woodbridge Department of Health have put this on. I think it's a great idea.
It is a great
idea. You know, it's funny. When you look at, okay, well, I want to eat healthier. I want to eat a little more low fat. I don't really believe in diet foods. I think they're a bad plan. I think the frozen dinner or the frozen lunch or the lean cuisine thing, I don't dig, and I don't think it does you well.
Well, I also think that you have a whole slew of artificial sweeteners that are used in all of these products, in a lot of these products that really...
By the way, as disturbing as artificial sweeteners are, and as ineffective as a lot of studies have shown them to be, how about the fats that aren't really digestible?
That run right through you,
and they come with the warning that they could really run right through you unexpectedly and cause an accident? Okay, just get stoned to potato chips. If you need potato chips that bad that you're willing to risk...
That's not so bad.
...an accident...
You know what?
Have a
it's
carrot.
It's not so bad being fat. I'll survive.
All right, so the indigestible fat, I can't understand why people are willing to risk an accident. You need chips that bad? You know, what I call that is poisoned food. If I said, oh, those chips, don't eat them. If you eat them, you might have an accident. You're going to have to run to the bathroom if you have that. There's a 20% chance you might have to run to the bathroom. Don't eat that. It's poison. But yet we sell it
here's an alternative
for you.
Oh,
wait, lose weight. Get diarrhea. Super. Terrific. What a great idea. And you buy it out there. I don't understand.
Yeah, this food makes you throw up. Here you go.
It's
for it.
It's called bulimia.
It's diet food.
It's poisoning yourself. My God. Anyway, but there is a way to lose weight, which is less convenient than, you know, buying diarrhea-inducing potato chips, you can cook healthy food. There are healthy foods you can cook. Look, we've had a lot of people on the show who talk about it. And look, to cook healthfully and well and tastily is somewhat less convenient, but not tremendous amount less convenient. If you can cook for yourself early in the week and put a bunch of stuff in the freezer that you can take with you, like sauces, like tomato sauce is pretty darn good for you. There's nothing wrong with tomato sauce, olive oil, garlic,
Listen, Francis, though, we shouldn't talk to anybody about how they should lose weight.
That's okay. True, because we haven't done it at all.
We shouldn't, because we eat too much. We eat foods that are high in starch. We eat foods that are high in sugars. We eat too many calories. We all do that. We don't all do that. But as a nation, that's what we're doing.
But we in a restaurant work in a place where the chef brings us 5 dishes a day to taste and try and tweak, and it's harder for us. But we should eat more healthfully than we do. And I think we're healthier than we would be if we ate a lot of processed junk.
Oh, I'm 100% sure.
Your doctor is always surprised. Now, you're a big guy, but your doctor is, you tell me all the time, you come back from your checkup, and your doctor's surprised at how healthy you are and your heart rate and your cholesterol and all that.
Yes, he is surprised.
And, you know, that comes from eating whole and real
foods. Because he looks at me and goes, boy, these numbers should be terrible.
Yeah, sure. But You know, there's a difference between eating Doritos and corn chips and those, you know, stuff out of the supermarket freezer department. We're doing another Chefs with Heart is another benefit that we're doing. Gosh, restaurants do so many benefits. It was in prior years it was at Yasna Polana
in Princeton,
and this coming year it's going to be, I don't have the date handy, it's going to be at the Heldrich in New Brunswick, right across the street from
the
us.
New hotel.
Which is a heck of a better commute for us, I'll tell you.
Well, if we've forgotten something, it's certainly,
yeah, exactly,
certainly easier to go get it.
Well, but the idea there is to come up with taste of food, and you know, like all of these dining around things, come up with taste of food, but to come up with healthy things. Well, what kind of healthy things? I was looking at our menu the other day. What kind of healthy things can we come up with? Well, you know, our whole antipasto bar at Catherine Lombardi.
Well, except for the salamis.
Right. Well, the salamis aren't really great for you, and the mozzarella not so good. But there's plenty of
eggplant caponata and
roasted peppers, roasted beets. Sardines,
marinated mushrooms,
anchovies. You know, these things are really, really, really tasty, and you can make a whole meal out of them. So it's all about the choices you make. But like so many people that come, that we've talked to about eating healthily, people say, oh, well, I never eat a food where you can't, if there's any ingredient on the ingredient list that you can't pronounce or recognize, don't eat it. And then other people say, anything that has more than five ingredients, don't eat it. My favorite is the one guy who said, don't eat anything that has an ingredient list. Don't buy anything that has an ingredient list.
Yeah, that's
buy
well,
carrots. I'm not there.
Yeah, I'm not there either. You know what you know where I have gotten to though?
What?
I've gotten to don't eat anything that really doesn't go bad.
Yeah, yeah. It should be perishable.
Don't eat anything that doesn't go bad. If it doesn't go bad, it's probably not great for you.
Well, you know, I take that to a real extreme with my milk. You know, the ultra-pasteurized, ultra-homogenized, the homogenized ultra-pasteurized milk is where I stay away from. I like raw milk. Now, it's hard to get in this state, but in Pennsylvania you can get it legally. In California you can get it legally. Raw milk is amazing, but it goes bad quickly.
Right.
What I can get legally in this state is Ronnybrook Farms unhomogenized, lightly pasteurized milk. It's absolutely
delicious.
Now, it separates. I get it delivered. I get my groceries from Fresh Direct. And it separates. It's absolutely delicious, but it goes bad. On the expiration date,
it's bad.
I'll
tell you, though, for those of you in this central Jersey area, tough to get down here. It's more of a North Jersey item, New York City.
It's bleeding in from New York.
It's bleeding in from New York City up there.
You can actually get it in farmers markets in glass, returnable glass bottles, which is very cool. But when you get it from Fresh Direct, it's in plastic.
There's also a stand at Union Square Market in New York City for anybody who's
looking for it.
And
in the Chelsea Market as well. They have a whole dairy.
Actually, Wegmans occasionally carries Ronnybrook. I've been to Wegmans, and they've had Ronnybrook on the shelves.
And they also make ice cream and stuff. It's all really good. And their cows don't see any hormones or antibiotics, and it's good stuff for you. And it tends to go bad on the expiration date. And the ultra-pasteurized stuff stays for a couple of weeks, but the milk's just not as good. And I have to believe, although I have no proof of this, that it's not as good for you.
In talking about pasteurization and milk for just one second, remember, if you keep your fridge colder, everything in there will stay fresher longer. People just kind of don't realize how important that is to keep your foods cold.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Judith Jones. She's one of the most important cookbook writers in the world. She is. She discovered Julia Child. She's edited John Updike. She's not just a cookbook writer. I look forward to an incredible interview. If you want to meet the restaurant guys tonight, come to the Wegmans in Woodbridge between 6 and 8:30. We'll be judging the mayor's healthy cook-off. You can meet some of our local mayors, and it should be a lot of fun. So maybe we'll see you tonight. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCT. The time is 11:16.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
This is the Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Judith Jones. She is Senior Editor and Vice President at Alfred A. Knopf, where she's worked since 1957. She's co-author of several books with Evan Jones. She's contributed to Vogue, Savoir, Gourmet. She's been editor for John Updike, John Hersey, William Maxwell, and she joins us today to discuss her new book, The Tenth Muse, My Life in Food.
Judith Jones, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's nice to talk with you.
Your work is pretty amazing. I mean, we're the restaurant guys, so we're going to focus on food for the most of the show, but you're not just a food editor. You edit John Updike, for heaven's sake.
Well, I think it's very good to do a number of different kinds of books as an editor. Then you don't, if you're exclusively a cookbook editor, I think then you begin to churn out just too many cookbooks, and this gives me the chance to be very selective and to really publish the kinds of books that I think make a genuine contribution instead of what to do with all that zucchini in the garden.
Well, Judith, I mean, along that vein, you know, your life is basically what I would call the definition of a life well lived. We talked about some of the books that you've gotten published. I mean, you're responsible for getting The Diary of Anne Frank published, one of the most important books of our generation.
Well, you know, Julia Child often said to me, Judith, we were born at the right time. And there's a certain truth to that, or just being there at the right time. But then you have to act on it. I will agree that, that if you just let things slip by or... Oh, measure too much the market. I feel that every book has its own character, and there aren't always precedents. There certainly wasn't a precedent for mastering the art of French cooking.
Well, let's take it back to, for just a moment, and we'll spend most of the show talking about Julia Child, because Julia Child had sort of racked up some rejections when you sort of championed her book. And the same thing happened with The Diary of Anne Frank, when you found that it was on its way to being rejected, yeah?
Yes, I found when I got back to New York that a number of publishers had rejected it. In fact, it had been rejected at Knopf, which is why I think Mrs. Knopf gave me a job for revenge.
Now, what
that happens with a lot of books. I mean, it's just, but you have to trust that instinct in yourself that if I feel so passionately about it, there must be others like me.
Are there changes in publishing since that time, or are things pretty much running the same?
Well, we've always had that. You know, that sense that you've got to have a few bestsellers to support the list and so on. I think it's probably even more so today because with all the new technology, people are using other means to get their information, and books are suffering.
Well, when you published Julia Child's first book, Mastering French Cooking, it had been rejected on the grounds that it was too advanced for the American home cook. Did you?
Oh, I think the men in Boston at Houghton Mifflin who called Mrs. Child in and said, you know, no woman in America wants to know this much about French cooking. They want it quick and easy. Well, how did they know? I mean, there was a tremendous turning point after World War II, I think, in our whole attitude towards food, and it really came about because both the GIs had been exposed to wonderful new tastes in Europe and the Far East, but most of all because for the first time every little secretary could take a plane and have a vacation in Paris and eat that French food for the first time, and it opened up our appetites. And we were curious and wanted to be able to reproduce these things at home. It was a pretty sorry scene at the time, with quick and easy dominating the food scene.
Well, and Julia Child was seminal in sort of changing that moment. She was sort of the lightning rod, as far as, you know, my understanding of the history. How did you know that she was the one? What did you see in that book that you said, you know, this is going to be the new thing?
Well, had never been a book that tried to explain technique and really translated a cuisine like French to the American scene. I mean, at that point, we'd never heard of shallots. You didn't have fresh mushrooms or all those fresh herbs and things in the supermarket. So Julia had to find viable substitutes. She didn't compromise. She made it possible for us to reproduce, say, a wonderful bourguignon. And to me, it was understanding the techniques most of all. You don't just throw beef in a pot and pour some red wine on it and cook it for 3 hours.
I think it's interesting for the people in the food business at in our generation, who Mark and I are in our 40s, and we sort of caught the end of that, or the dawn of the new restaurant and cooking era. It's almost hard to imagine, although we were kids when it was still the case, it's hard to imagine a world where we didn't know what shallots were.
I know. It is very hard to imagine that.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back with Judith Jones. We're going to talk about her book, The Tenth Muse, a book about her life in food, and it's certainly been one of the most important American lives in food, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we're speaking today with Judith Jones about her book, The Tenth Muse, My Life in Food. Judith, we talked about how the American palate and the American cooking sensibility evolved from a place where we didn't know what shallots were to where it is today. Your life went through a similar sort of awakening. You didn't grow up in a very rich culinary tradition. Is that correct?
No, I certainly didn't. Garlic was banned from the house, and we were always blowing away cooking smells. And you didn't talk about food at the table. It was rather vulgar, like talking about sex. So you maybe said thank you afterwards. That was delicious.
Judith,
no yum-yum sounds.
Judith, in my family, we banned people who didn't eat garlic.
Oh, good.
Well, you know, I remember reading in there's a wonderful book by a woman named Margaret Visser called The Rites and Rituals of Dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks
mm-hmm.
about how Victorian houses were designed to have the kitchen be as far away from the living quarters and the dining room as possible, which, of course, we find terribly inconvenient today. But the idea of that the cooking smells would waft into the dining room was just, you know, that shows that you are poor and ill-mannered.
Yep.
And so
she was a wonderful teacher, but once she got on television, I think she released all of us. We were just dying to make those yum-yum sounds and experiment and appreciate and, you know, slap the chicken breast and massage it with butter. And she opened up that sort of whole sensuous nature of cooking and the fun of it. She had a good time. And we'd been told, particularly by the food industry going back to the 19th century, poor little woman, it's demeaning to cook, you know. You can do better than that. Buy our products and you don't have to go in the kitchen.
You can be released from the drudgery of making a cake by making a terrible cake from our box.
That's right.
We're going to listen to the news, and hopefully, Judith, you'll stay with us and come back on the other side of the news.
Okay.
Excellent. Judith Jones, a Lifetime Achievement Award winner from the James Beard Foundation, one of the most important American publishers with the food and industry and what's happened in our food culture today. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with The Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Judith Jones is our guest. She's her book is The 10th Muse, My Life in Food. You can pick it up at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. She is the editor and senior vice president at Alfred Knopf, where she's worked since 1957. She's the winner of a James Beard Foundation Lifetime Achievement Award. She's contributed to Vogue, Savoir, Gourmet, and she joins us today to talk about her book and her life in food. Judith, before the break, we were talking about how, you know, you grew up in a rather buttoned-down house where, you know, the yum-yum sounds weren't allowed at the table,
mm-hmm.
and how Julia Child sort of gave a whole a class of people for whom that had been impolite before, because, you mm-hmm. know, of course, Julia was you know, in the higher strata of society, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did that change? When did it cease to be impolite?
When were we allowed to start enjoying cooking?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was really in the 50s when she was on television all over America. Even people who didn't cook enjoyed watching her. And I think she just, as I said, released us so that it was all there. But we were able to express that pleasure. And as a result, a lot of the different ethnic groups in America express themselves through their food instead of sort of sublimating it to the awful American grab a bite kind of mentality. And so you saw Middle Eastern restaurants cropping up and good Italian restaurants, regional Italian, wonderful Chinese restaurants that we hadn't had before.
Well, we talked earlier about the fact that many Americans had never seen shallots or cuisine like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, it was the immigrants had little gardens in their backyards. They were growing fig trees. They were growing foods indigenous in their countries in their own backyards.
It's true, but if somebody in the food business in Greece opened a restaurant here, it was an American restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly we were all eating things like spanakopita, and it happened with so many different ethnic groups. And then towards the end of the 20th century, with the immigration law changed, we got a whole nother new wave, particularly from Asia. And Americans are very open to those new tastes now. We weren't 60 years ago, but we certainly are today.
Now, I mentioned that you were given a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006 from the James Beard Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and that's a pretty significant accomplishment, but you knew James Beard and Julia Child, and sure, you were there at the moment. Were you aware that there was a sea change taking place in the way in America's relationship with food?
Was I aware?
Were you aware at the time
at
that
the
there
time
was
of
a
the
real
significance of what was happening?
Change going on?
Oh, I think yes. I mean, it really, I think doing these books awakened me, and I realized that I wanted to get, if you could do this for Mastering Art of French Cooking, why couldn't you do it for Indian cooking and Chinese cooking, as I said? But you really needed a great teacher leading the way. And so I got very much into a whole series of cookbooks that I thought made that kind of contribution. We're real teaching books. No apology that cooking has to be entertainment, which I think there's too much of today. People really want to learn to do it, and then they feel confident and they begin to have fun.
Well, in addition to Julia Child, that wasn't the end of the story. You went on to continue to pick out people who had been unknown before you published them and got behind them, people like Claudia Roden, who'd been on our show.
Mm-hmm.
You always seem to back the right horse.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that has been written about all of the cookbooks that you've been involved with is they're very authentic. What does that mean for a cookbook to be authentic?
Well, to me, it means that the person who is writing has experienced this food, grew up with it as a child. I find that some of those books, like Nada Jaffe's and Claudia Roden's, are very beautiful because they had to leave their past. And it's a way of reconnecting with one's family and place of birth. And the whole joy, as, say, Claudia Roden would express, of the women sitting around and stuffing little tasty dishes and sending down a basket to the street vendor and hauling up the food, and the pleasure that one got in reconnecting with that and bringing it to people. And so the memory is very tied in with it, and that's, to me, what is authentic.
You know, the thing that what I see in cookbooks today, and what Mark and I, we're fortunate enough to have a lot of wonderful authors come on the show, as well as a number of wonderful chefs.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that all cookbooks today have a story and seek to contextualize the recipes. And it seems as though most storybooks about food have recipes in them.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that what most people are seeking is context, and your books have always done that.
Mm-hmm.
How important is context?
To me, it's very important. A recipe isn't just a formula. It has a story, and it's also in the way that writer puts down the details of the recipe that makes a huge difference to me. You know, you're all alone in the kitchen, and it isn't enough to just put in a bowl, combine the first mixture with the second mixture, which is the way a lot of those formula recipes read today. I want a better word than combine. I want to know whether it's mix or beat or fold or gently, whether it's a gentle or a harsh. And it's choosing those words. And if you've experienced it as a cook, you project that into the writing. I think perhaps too many fancy chefs just hire somebody to do their cookbooks, and they look beautiful and they're fun to read, but they don't translate to the home kitchen.
Judith, I don't just want to use those words like mix or whatever the word may be. I want to know why I'm doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. And at what point to stop?
Mm-hmm.
When it may fall apart. And you go back and read those recipes of Julia's in Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and it's a learning experience, and it's imprinted in your memory so that next time you know how to brown a piece of meat.
I think for a lot of people, too, Julia Child and, of course, Jacques Pepin, when she did her show Pepin, that was one of the great parts of watching those shows, is they were telling you why you were doing it, not just going through the mechanics of it.
They tell you why, and then they begin to quarrel, and Julia would say, well, I do it this way, and Jacques would say,
my favorite of all the shows that Julia and Jacques did together was there was once they were arguing about how much butter to put into a particular thing, and of course Julia felt there should be more, and Jacques won the argument, but then he turned his back and Julia threw in a stick of butter and for the audience to see, and he never knew, and it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
It was great fun doing that cookbook, because what was the recipe? So we decided to do, they each had a different color, and Jacques' way, you knew you were reading Jacques, and Julia's, so it also tells you that no recipe is written in stone. You're invited to enter in and do it your way.
Well, and I would imagine that, you know, obviously you're an editor, John Updike, and when you edit novels and short stories by John Updike, I'm sure that's a different skill set than when you edit a cookbook from a great chef. I would imagine that not every great and passionate chef is a great writer.
No, that's of course part of the trouble, and doesn't have time to write his book. But I always insist now, after learning through hard experience, that whoever is writing is there in the kitchen. I get in the kitchen with them, and I say, "Why are you doing that?" And then say to the writer, "Express it. You know, explain why we're doing it in his voice." And it's the only way. You really have to work your way through the recipes and watch them being done.
Well, as every cookbook you've ever touched has turned to gold, I guess everyone we should listen to what you say is the way to do things. We'll come back in just a moment and talk more with Judith Jones about her book, The Tenth Muse, My Life in Food. Again, you can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And we'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, it's 1145.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're here talking with Judith Jones about her book, The Tenth Muse, and about her life in food. Judith, one of my favorites. Stories in your book is you actually ran a little bit of an illegal restaurant there for a little while in France.
Oh, it was illegal.
You want to tell us about your commando restaurant in France?
Well, I was living in Paris. I had gone for a vacation, and then I was about to go home, and my purse was stolen. So I decided it was a sign that I was supposed to stay on, and I did stay on for 3.5 years. And one of my first ventures was a friend invited me into the apartment that his aunt, the Princess Kaitani, had. And so we were all set. We had this big apartment and shelter. All we needed was to be able to pay for our food. And we decided, well, why not get a Frenchman who's a good cook to help us out, and we'll have little American dinner parties and invite people living in Paris to come for dinner, but charge them, which is known as the restaurant.
Yeah, I've been having dinner parties for 16
the
years.
The gendarmes would definitely consider that gendarmerie would definitely consider that a restaurant. Yes.
Yeah. And, so anyway, it was quite a success. I had a French boyfriend at the time who was a terrific cook, and he loved, you know, in his that condescending French way of teaching Americans how to eat. But pretty soon the concierge of the apartment caught on that these weren't little dinner parties. Something else was going on, and she wrote to the princess who was in Rome, and the princess was on the next train, and I was ousted.
The princess did not want to participate in one of the dinner parties?
That's just great.
No. She was very discreet about it.
Time to go, Judy. Now, I want to talk about what you're doing now, because your book is wonderful, and we want everyone to go to our website and click on through and pick it up. But you're in your 80s now. You're 83? I mean, I hope that's not rude to say, but you've mentioned it in a couple of articles.
Yes, I am. Yes.
And you cook still every night
for yourself.
Yes, in fact, I'm doing another little book called The Pleasures of Cooking for One.
That's wonderful.
And I'm having such fun with it. I mean, I always go home and cook something good. And it's a whole strategy. It isn't just about one dish at a time. It's about looking in your fridge and your freezer and seeing what you can create out of what you've got and thinking through the week. So you use, say, a little tenderloin of pork in 3 totally different ways. And on Sundays, maybe making some special things like icebox cookies. Or I want to get people cooking again. I think it's just so sad that they buy all this fast food, which isn't particularly good for them. But most of all, they miss one of the great pleasures of life. And even when you're alone, you know, you set a little table and light the candle, have a glass of wine. It's a very beautiful experience. And So that's what I'm trying to convey.
That's wonderful. And I think even today, what you see is, oh, the kids aren't here, so we're not going to cook, so we're not going to sit down and
that's
have a
right.
meal. And it just seems so silly. What a great time to sit down and enjoy that time. You have time.
Mm-hmm.
Cook something
mm-hmm.
for yourself. Cook something for just the two of you. It seems like the best time to do something like that, not the worst time.
And it doesn't take that much longer if you're organized and you put certain things away. I mean, always have a nice tomato sauce available, that kind of thing. Have little bouillon, little ice cube sizes of frozen chicken stock, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have them right at hand, you can put something together in a half an hour.
Well,
takes that long to go and stand in line at the takeout.
In an interview done published in the New York Times last year with Julia Moskin, who's one of our favorite writers,
yes.
she quoted you as saying, cooking is a terrible thing to take away from aging people. You then edited yourself and said, well, old people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that at the time I read that last, I think October it came out, and I clipped it and I put it on the side of my desk, and I thought, you know, that's very important that you just you don't stop talk to us about how important that is to an older person.
It is, because you tend to be somewhat marginalized. There are things that you can't do as well as you did when you were young, but cooking is something you can do, and it's also very good because you pay attention, you do it with care, and so that's very good when you're old and alone. But more than that, I truly believe that respecting food and taking the time to do it well, the little bit of finesse that goes in, the pleasure in making a nice plate and having your table set, is very good for you. And you're keeping up a tradition. And it's very good for you spiritually, just that you feel good about yourself. And I want to really persuade people that they're missing something.
Well, I look forward to reading your new book, Cooking for One. I think your philosophies on food are amazing. And having shared them through a lifetime of editing and writing, you know, you've really shaped what Mark and I have done with our restaurants and our radio show. It's just amazing.
Judith, it's been wonderful to have you on the show today.
Oh, well, I've really enjoyed it.
And all of our listeners are going to go and buy your book through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. It's called The Tenth Muse by Judith Jones, and you should certainly pick it up. Thanks again for being on the show, Judith.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Judith.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1155.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. That's Mark and Francis of The Restaurant Guys Radio, who you can see tonight at Wegmans at 6 o'clock in Woodbridge for the Mayor's Healthy Cook-Off.
One of the last things that Judith touched upon was that as you get older, more you get marginalized more and more. There are fewer and fewer things that you have choices over. There are a lot of choices that you lose. And I just can't think of a better choice to have than what you're going to eat and how much it's salted and what ingredients you put into it, and just be able to creating that meal for yourself. She still does this 6-7 nights a week, and I just think that's great. I think that's one of the most important choices we make every day.
That's interesting. It's about empowerment, but it's also about, and Judith has written about this somewhat, and Julia Moskin wrote about a discussion she had with Judith, an interview she did with her, and she talks about how, you know, Judith, who's in her 80s, talks about how, well, you know, measuring things and being careful with things and exercising the intellect a little bit, not just doing recipes by rote,
mm-hmm.
Keeps her bright. It keeps her mind alive. You know, but she sounds like a heck of a woman. She reminds me of Katharine Hepburn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's sort of that New England tough lady that I wouldn't mess with. She was in a car accident just a couple of years ago. The car was flooded as she was driving,
mm-hmm.
and she had to swim to safety. She's in her 80s,
mm-hmm.
and she swam to...
Well, that was she was younger at that time.
Okay.
But still impressive.
I'm impressed.
I'm impressed.
But and she cooks dinner every night. She still goes for a swim in the pond by her house once or twice a day when she's up in Vermont. She splits her time between Vermont and New York. It's a fascinating woman. And
with a really fascinating story. I mean, The Tenth Muse is a great book, and she's a fascinating woman.
And she's John Updike's editor. She discovered The Diary of Anne Frank and Julia Child. There's a life well lived right there.
Yeah.
Well, pick up the book. Check it out. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time's 12 noon.